This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Children on Medicaid who need mental health services are only covered for 3 days at an inpatient facility. Healthcare workers need to request permission to keep them longer. That's not enough time, according to critics. The Indiana State Senate has taken up the issue with a bill that, if passed, would extend the time frame from 3 days to 5 business days. We'll talk today about why some see the change as crucial and why some are worried about it. And if you have questions or comments on our show today, please let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail. Call us at 866-476-3881. Just give your name, where you're calling from, and a quick question or comment, and we'll do our best to get it into the conversation today. Again, that's 866-476-3881. Joining me now is Carter Barrett, health reporter for Side Effects Public Media. Thanks for coming in, Carter.
Thanks, Matt.
So the change we're talking about here, the possible change, applies to a specific group of people in a specific situation. Can you explain who they are?
Yeah, absolutely. So this bill only applies to children and teens, so people under 18, that are on Medicaid and that need inpatient mental health services, and specifically short-term.
Okay, and so then what effect would this bill, you know, it's a bill moving through the state house. What would it do if it passed?
So right now, current state policy is 3 days. And then this bill would move that to, if passed, would move it to 5 business days. And while that doesn't seem like a huge change, lawmakers are quite happy. And people I've talked to in mental health are quite happy with that, because as it stands now, 3 days also includes weekends, which can make it difficult to have the adequate people on staff. And so lawmakers are hoping that this will help kids not end up in a facility for 3 days and then prematurely released before they can get a full course of treatment.
Not to mention reaching out to healthcare insurance providers who might not be in the office on a weekend.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Monday is like the day that you can reach those people.
Is that part of the reason for the business days clause as well?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so what's the argument then being made to increase this 3-day time period?
Yeah, so here's a scenario that is concerning, you know, these lawmakers and hospital administrators. You know, a child or teen is admitted for a short-term stay at a mental health facility. And then after this 3-day limit, which, as we talked about, includes weekends, hospitals must go and ask Medicaid insurers for additional days if they see that necessary. And maybe they don't, but maybe they do. And they have to go and ask for these. And they are saying this is, like, very frequently denied. And so then it falls back on the hospitals or parents to cover this cost.
Do we know what traditional insurers, what their policies are compared to the Medicaid? Or is when we're talking about Medicaid, are we almost always talking about a shorter stay compared to traditional insurers?
So there's different types of Medicaid, right? And so this is pretty much targeted towards managed care Medicaid, as opposed to maybe a traditional Medicaid that you're referencing, which would be fee-for-service. And so the state pays them per person per month to insure these Medicaid patients.
So is this then the same thing as an MCO? Is that what an MCO, managed care organization, or are we talking about something different?
Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
That's the exact same thing. So what role do they play in this then?
A managed care organization is a third-party company that is in a contract with the state to provide insurance for people on Medicaid rolls. So these in Indiana are Anthem, CareSource, MedWise, Managed Health Services, or MHS. And so if you're a person who is receiving Medicaid, managed care Medicaid, you are on their rolls. You turn to them for approvals. And that is kind of exactly what this bill is addressing, the Medicaid that is managed by these third-party companies. And these companies get paid by the state per person, per month that they have on the rolls. It's a set amount of money, a capitation rate. And so this is the groups that people are saying are denying additional days for mental health treatment for these kids.
Mm. Has the policy been different in the past? Has this kind of been carved down to where it is now, this 3-day stay, or has this been created and it just wasn't enough at the time that it was created, I suppose?
No. So from people I've heard talk about this, you know, this has been, it used to be as long as 30 days.
So it's at a tenth currently of what it used to be under certain circumstances.
Yeah. And it is just slowly over time kind of whittled down. And I think 30 days, people might argue, is too long. But 3 days, people say, is definitely not enough.
So then is this legislation that's moving through, what is it, Senate Bill 192?
Mm-hmm.
Is it, I guess, seen as a first step? Or do they think that this will be enough?
Hospital administrators I've talked to are pretty happy with this bump, actually. It doesn't maybe sound like a lot, 3 days, 5 business days, but, you know, this could essentially give somebody 7 days in a mental health facility.
Well, if you count weekends.
Yeah, and they're pretty happy with that.
So have MCOs responded to the bill, managed care organizations? Has there been any pushback from them?
They have not responded to me. They all declined an interview for this story that I worked on. And watching testimony on this bill, I didn't see any of them come and testify against it. Senator Grooms, the author of this bill, told me that he didn't see any pushback. And so I can't say that there's any seeable pushback on this bill.
So then are there any other concerns about this change? Do lawmakers seem worried about doing it? Any of them whatsoever?
You know, this bill passed unanimously in the Senate.
But not without a few changes, though,
right? Yeah, exactly. Well, this bill was originally 7 days, and then it became 5 business days, and that seemed to please most people. But some of the concerns that were brought up in committee were about doctors and hospitals sort of maybe keeping people longer than they typically would just to get paid for it, and, you know, hospital overspending, which leads to higher healthcare costs for everybody. And so those concerns were brought up, and then people seemed pleased with the 5 business days.
Were the changes made based on those concerns, or were changes made based on other things that people brought up? What were the changes, I suppose?
Well, the only change was moving from 7 days to 5 business days, and the lawmakers who sort of brought up these concerns did propose this amendment, and it passed.
Further illustrating the fact that this is, well, from what we've heard, is a first step. 7 business days may have been a little bit better.
I don't know. I mean, I think from who I've talked to, while they want to look at, you know, this bill just applies to children, looking at extending these same considerations to adults, I think people seem pretty happy with the 5 business days.
So what data do we have on this? Have any healthcare facilities talked about exactly how often their request to keep kids longer gets rejected?
Yeah, sure. I talked to in Evansville, a hospital administrator, Scott Branham, with Deaconess Crosspoint, which is a mental health clinic. And he says they see these additional days, specifically for kids on Medicaid, denied at a much higher rate as opposed to commercial insurance, for instance. You know, he told me that they see 90% of and this applies, these numbers apply across the board, adults and children. But he says they see 90% of Medicaid patients denied additional days, while only about 2% of commercially insured patients are denied additional days. You know, and he says at this hospital, they're using the same physicians, the same criteria, the same reviewers, the same medical records, and that these numbers should be the same.
That's a really big discrepancy.
Yeah.
And you bring up some pretty incredible examples in your story about how the insurers have gotten out of keeping kids in these mental health inpatient facilities. What are some of those examples?
Yeah, and I think Dr. Henshaw, who'll be on the next segment, could really elaborate on this because this is who I heard it from. But, you know, she talked about a foster care teen who was admitted into a facility on a Friday. Even if it's Friday night, that's day one of this 3 days.
So even if they show up late on a Friday,
that's day one.
That's counted as almost as 24 hours, essentially?
That's counted as day one in this 3 days.
Oh, 3 days. Okay.
Yeah. And so, you know, and he was, you know, this kid was admitted. He was being aggressive, punching walls. And when they reached his caseworker, he was a foster kid. So when they reached his caseworker on Sunday, which was pretty remarkable because they tend to be hard to reach on the weekends, they started him on a new medication. But on Monday, when they reached the insurance companies, they wouldn't cover any additional days because they said he hadn't wanted to kill himself for 24 hours. You know, and I think it's worth saying that the family, and I reached out to the Family and Social Services Administration about this. This is the state agency who runs Medicaid and, you know, manages these third-party companies. And they said that, based on their data, the average length of stay in a mental health facility for someone under 18 is 6 days. And so that kind of goes directly against maybe what I've heard from hospital administrators, you know, especially these numbers that I just mentioned from Scott Branham. And so maybe that's why there hasn't been a lot of pushback, because we're already receiving 6 days. So
children in foster care, I mean, that's a really vulnerable population. How does this current policy affect them? It seems like they're among the people getting the least amount of care.
Yeah. So because they're in foster care, and there's additional barriers that, you know, these doctors and psychiatrists have to go to approve care for them, you know, that creates some issues. And that's definitely part of the business days part of this, because, you know, you can't reach a caseworker on a Saturday. You can't reach the care organizations on a Sunday. And so that's part of the intention here. But I talked to a woman, Christy Cundiff, who's a foster parent advocate, and she said she hears stories all the time of foster parents not going forward with planned adoptions after they face trouble accessing these kids' mental health treatment. And so that's pretty significant, I think.
So why then are we talking about this now? Why is this an issue right now? Obviously, the problem is there, but is it timely?
Yeah. And I mean, I would maybe speculate that, you know, this has come up because mental health for children has been a huge issue in the State House since the shooting at Noblesville West Middle School, I think, really kickstarted a lot of this conversation, even though this is almost maybe there's not a lot of overlap between this bill and that instance. But I think it just speaks to lawmakers, you know, strong intentions to try to address Indiana's very higher than average youth suicide rate and try to pull that under control, you know, and especially since the concern here is that kids are getting booted out of these facilities before they can complete a full course of treatment, which is both part of the argument is that it is more costly, you know, because they're just going to come back. So is that just more costly in the end? And then also, you know, they're not getting the care that they need. And the concern is, you know, those kids might go and do something reckless or
it's
dangerous.
Reactive instead of proactive.
Yeah.
Carter Barrett is with Side Effects Public Media, a public health news collaborative based here at our flagship station, WFYI in Indianapolis. Carter, thanks for your reporting.
Thanks, Matt.
Up next, we'll bring in a therapist from a mental health facility to talk about the impact our current policy has on her work and the kids she sees every day. And we'd love to hear from you as well. Send us a voicemail by calling 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. Or leave a question or comment on social media. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about a bill working its way through the State House that would change the rules for children on Medicaid who need mental health services. As always, we would love your questions and comments on the topic. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from. 866-476-3881 is the number to call. That's 866-476-3881. And a quick note before we get going with our guest. We talked in the first segment about the managed care organizations that decide how long kids on Medicaid can stay in a mental health facility. In Indiana, these are four companies working through a contract with the state: Anthem, CareSource, MedWise, and Managed Health Services. Three of those companies rejected our invitation to come on the show today, and the other did not respond. On the phone now, we're joined by Dr. Darla Hinshaw, who works as a child and adolescent psychiatrist at Harsha Behavioral Center in Terre Haute. Thanks for taking the time, Darla.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks for having me.
So before we get into this bill, can you explain what you do in your role as a child and adolescent psychiatrist?
Well, I obviously had specialty training in psychiatry, but then went on to do even more specialized training to be able to treat children and adolescents with mental health needs. And I have attended medical school, so I do prescribe medications for these children. And in my capacity at Harsha Behavioral Center, I do inpatient work and I do outpatient work as well.
How long have you been at it?
30 years.
So you've got plenty to say on this topic today.
Well, yeah, I'm pretty passionate about it.
So we talked to our health reporter about this in the last segment, but can you kind of explain how this 3-day rule works?
Like she was saying earlier, you know, back when I first started training, we used to get 30 days on a Medicaid kid to, you know, evaluate them, do testing, you know, talk to families, talk to schools, and just do better overall treatment. And over the years, it has dwindled down to now this, like, 3-day length of stay. It starts with, you know, a child's admitted, and, like, if I get that child at 10 o'clock on a Friday night, that's its first day, and it consists of 2 hours only. Second day starts at midnight. So by the time I've seen the kid the next morning and trying to get, you know, collateral information and trying to make a good decision as far as therapy and medications and, you know, what do we do next, I'm already, you know, done with my second day, and they've got to go the next day.
So 30 days is what it used to be.
Yes.
It's now a tenth of what it was, 3 days, and that includes weekends. Senate Bill 192, which is moving its way through the State House, extends that to 5 business days. Is that a first step, do you think, or do we need to get to where we get even closer to that 30 days? Was 30 days, did that seem like almost too much to you?
At this point in time, I would say 30 days is excessive. That's more when we're looking at residential treatment. And the residential programs do a really good job of that longer-term look at a child and all of their problems and needs. My bottom line is, I think the decisions about how long a child needs to be hospitalized need to be left to the people that actually treat them. Instead, we're leaving those decisions to, you know, are they even bachelor's prepared people that are sitting behind a desk that have never laid eyes on this child, and they just arbitrarily say, well, my book says you can only have 3 days.
But there are arguments, I guess, that may say, well, if we leave it up to doctors and hospitals, and we're talking about government insurance or government-backed insurance, then what if they're just taking the insurance money? They're just saying that the patient needs to stay so that they can get more money.
So funny that you mentioned that, because during the Senate subcommittee hearing, one of the senators actually brought that up and said, you know, what if there's doctors out there that just want to take their money, or hospitals that just want to take their money? And it was countered by one of the other senators who said, overall, I believe that the majority of people, physicians, are good people, and they err on the right side, or the ethical side of doing things. And there may be a rare instance where somebody is trying to take money from someone, but in this line of work, for this group of people, you know, these Medicaid kids are some of the most underserved kids in the United States. So the likelihood that someone's going to make millions of dollars off of, you know, an extra few days is probably slim to none.
So what are the scenarios that we're looking at? What I guess have been some of the more extreme examples that have led us to this point where we're demanding more time? This is not enough. 3 days is not enough. In what circumstance what's inspired this, I guess?
The case of the adolescent boy that you were talking about in the first segment is actually a child that I've known for quite some time, and he ended up back in an acute care setting because he was out of touch with reality with his thinking. He was actually manic and what we call psychotic, and I needed to get this kid on medication to get him his behaviors back under control, because not only was he punching walls, he was punching people in the group home that he was at. He was extremely violent, and like she was telling you, by some weird chance, we got a hold of the caseworker on a Sunday, and she gave permission for medication. So he started that medicine. He'd only had 2 doses of it, and I had to send him back to the residential facility. The only reason I allowed that to happen was because I also and the psychiatrist for that residential facility. So although I knew I was going to have follow-up with that young man, but he was very, very sick, very psychiatrically ill, and they stuck to their, you get 3 days, that's it.
How did you feel when that news came down and you knew that that child needed to be in your care longer?
It makes me extremely angry, and I feel so bad for the kids because they need so much more. And I was thinking about kind of this in general, and I don't know if you have children or not, maybe.
I do.
So let's say, and we're in a society where mental health isn't looked at as a medical illness. So let's say your child gets in a very severe motor vehicle accident, has multiple broken bones, has to have their spleen removed, and maybe has a head injury. And they get flown into a hospital and they start their treatment. So 3 days in, they're going to call you and say, I'm sorry, but insurance isn't going to pay for you anymore. Would you not be irate?
I suppose that I would, but it's a little harder. I guess in our current society, it's a little harder to define those injuries. I mean, would you even call them injuries? Mental illness is a little bit harder to understand for a lot of people. Whereas if
that is true,
if there is a physical injury, it's that you can put that on paper and you can list that, I suppose.
Yes, but when I put on paper that I have a child that's just been removed from a home where the parents had a meth lab running, they were being sexually abused by the people that were in and out of the house buying meth, and they were just removed a week ago, to me that's as catastrophic an injury to that child's psyche as is the physical injuries that I was describing for the child in the motor vehicle accident.
So we talked about the example of the boy who was manic and psychotic. Mm-hmm. That is kind of an extreme example, but one that certainly deserves our attention. What about a typical situation, one that this would apply to? Are children in typical situations, Medicare kids, do they need these 5 business days?
There's going to be times when not necessarily. But again, I think that decision needs to be left to the professionals that are seeing this child face-to-face every day and to make that decision. Let's say I have a Medicaid kid that's just got run-of-the-mill ADHD that's not been treated, but that child's very violent. We see kindergartners at the hospital that have been suspended from kindergarten because they're aggressive. And sometimes all it takes is just adding an ADHD medicine, and we can turn them around pretty quickly. So, again, it needs to be left to the professionals and not to some book in an office somewhere deciding that a kid's only worthy of 3 days.
We have a listener voicemail from Jane in Richmond who says she has concerns about the current 3-day policy. Let's hear that now.
I'm Jane. I'm calling from Richmond. I'm a retired psychiatric social worker. 3 days is not long enough to evaluate either a child or an adult in a psychiatric facility. Usually there's a matter of starting or changing medication. 3 days is not long enough to tell if the medication is making a difference. 5 days is not really enough. 5 business days is a little better, but 3 days is absolutely ridiculous, and I know of some horror stories. So that's my opinion, and it is an informed opinion. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. And if you're just joining us, we're talking about the Senate Bill 192, which is moving through the State House, which would extend Medicaid stays at mental health inpatient facilities from 3 days to 5 business days. And we're talking with Dr. Darla Hinshaw about that. Dr. Hinshaw, did that resonate with you?
Yes, absolutely. And she's right. We can't do enough in 3 days. And yes, are 5 business days enough for some people? No, not at all. But it's a starting point. It's a place where we can start at and it'll be much better than the 3 days. And with the 5 business days, it gives us more time to plan outpatient follow-up, other treatments, therapies, because these illnesses don't go away by just starting a medication. It's a multidisciplinary treatment that goes into helping these children. So, but with the longer length of time, it allows us to get that in place better.
Dr. Hinshaw, you have 30 years of experience at this. Once a patient reaches a point with their illness that they have to be checked into an inpatient facility, would you say that the situation is severe or dire that they're in to get to that point?
I think in mental health, because of what we talked about earlier, just our society doesn't see mental health as serious as some physical illness you can put your eyes on and actually visualize. I think people wait longer before they make that step to put someone in an inpatient facility. So yes, many times it's far worse than had they presented sooner.
And we're talking today about children under 18, and that's what Senate Bill 192 addresses specifically. Why only make this change for children?
Well, and I agree with Jane, our caller, stating that we need it more so in adults as well, but I have very few adult patients that I treat. So I guess I'm really vocal about the kids who can't speak for themselves and tell people what they need.
So then what's the process like, asking the managed care organizations or MCOs for permission to keep people longer? Is that stressful, or do you even see that part of it?
We actually we have a department within our organization that actually makes those phone calls and, you know, reads through progress notes while the child's in the facility. And if they don't think they have enough critical criteria, they deny us more days.
Have you talked to those people who are making those phone calls? I mean, do they
Yes.
Do they often feel like, even though they're listing all of these reasons and these arguments, that in this kind of a scenario, it's like talking to a wall or something like that?
Yes. We take the case of the adolescent male that we were talking about earlier. We called for more days on him, and their excuse was, well, he hasn't said he's going to kill himself. Yet he was very violent to other people. So that was their reasoning for denying days.
I guess how often do those requests get rejected? Is it almost every time?
It's very frequent. We don't have actual numbers pulled together, but I know Deaconess Crosspoint pulled together their numbers, and they said 90%.
90% of this, so 9 out of 10 times, regardless of the situation, well,
right.
Perhaps not regardless of the situation, but in most scenarios, 9 out of 10 times, it's being rejected.
Correct.
Do they give reasons why they reject? I mean, we talked a little bit about it. It seems like a technicality. But as you said, in the extreme scenario of the child who was manic and psychotic, he
right.
had not threatened suicide. That was one reason why they rejected. Mm-hmm. And he had started on new medication?
Correct. So I remember another case where a kid had actually taken the hinges off of his dad's gun case and gotten a gun and was going to shoot himself to end his life. So we get him in the hospital and, you know, get him involved in therapies and whatnot, started on a medication, and, you know, say he stabilized over those 72 hours and hasn't said he wants to kill himself. Because of the seriousness of that suicide attempt, we usually want to keep them longer and get them more therapies, group therapies, and give them coping skills, et cetera, give medicines longer time to make sure that his mood's actually going in the right direction. But they said, well, he hasn't said he was suicidal since he came in, so he has to go.
How is that time spent in a mental health facility? I mean, 3 days may not seem like a lot. What is done in that 3 days, and how would the additional 2 days or 4 days, if carried over a weekend, be spent? And we've got about a minute left.
So we do a family therapy session so that we get information from whatever guardian, DCS, care worker. The therapists do that. I attempt to make a phone call to family members or DCS workers. So we do that. They're involved in group therapies. There's a schedule that goes on the unit that goes on all day long. So our visiting hours are in the evening so that family visitation doesn't interrupt that schedule. But there's recreation therapy, and there's all kinds of things that help them hopefully cope with the stresses in their life better than they had prior to hospitalization. So there is quite a bit that goes on within that 72 hours.
Where does the child spend most of that 72 hours? Is it in one room? Is it throughout the facility?
It's throughout the facility.
And they're meeting with a number of different health professionals, and how, I guess, would the extra time be spent if they needed it to be?
More of what they're already getting, plus I would like to have the ability back to find out more from the schools. Mm. We don't hardly ever get information from the schools. Just because there's no time to do that.
We're with Dr. Darla Hinshaw, a child and adolescent psychologist, a psychiatrist at the Harsha Behavioral Health Center in Terre Haute. When we come back, we will hear from one of the state senators behind the bill that aims to address this problem. I'm Matt Pelzer. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelzer. Back now to our discussion about children on Medicaid who need mental health services and a bill at the State House that would extend the standard amount of time those kids could stay at an inpatient facility. We're joined again by Dr. Darla Hinshaw, who works as a child and adolescent psychiatrist at Harsha Behavioral Health Center, a behavioral center in Terre Haute. Thanks for sticking around, Darla.
Thank you.
And as always, we would love to hear your questions and comments. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. So I'm curious how you've been involved in this bill moving through the State House.
We brought this this issue to the attention of Senator Ford and Senator Grooms, and they decided that it was important to them, and they co-authored the bill together. I've been to the Senate subcommittee hearing to testify to them about, you know, why we felt like we needed an extension of these days. I'm just really fearful that since we're already the second, number two in the highest number of suicides in Indiana over 30 states, that it's just going to continue to go higher if we can't get better treatment to these kids.
We've already talked about the severe scenario, the boy who was psychotic and manic. But what else did you say when you testified in support of the bill? What did you talk about?
My role, there were four of us that testified. My role was to give them some case scenarios, and I discussed actually three different cases. One involved a three-year-old who had been removed from, or actually a four-year-old had been removed from family, nonverbal, still using a bottle, still in diapers, horrifically abused, had been, skeletal surveys showed multiple broken bones throughout their body. Mm. And we were trying to figure out, is some of this related to head trauma? Is it developmental? Is the kid have an intellectual disability, or is it just pure deprivation? And it's hard to sort all of that out with just 72 hours. And we want to be able to give DCS a good answer about, here's what we think's going on, here's what we think this kid needs for follow-up.
How long has this been a frustration of yours? I guess, how long has this been festering?
I have been with Harsha for the last 7 years. And we probably started out, right around a week length of stay, 6 to 7 days. And over this last 7 years, it's gone down to the 3 days. And I'd say the last 18 months, it's been real bad.
We have another listener voicemail. This one is from Bill in South Bend. He's concerned about what happens after a young person leaves inpatient care. Let's listen.
Hi, this is Bill from South Bend. just commenting on the current program. Increasing the days to 5 business days or inpatient stays for children and adolescents, not necessarily bad. However, the worry is more what happens when the child gets out of the hospital. There should be some flexibility depending on the treatment plan, more when a child comes in crisis into the hospital versus putting limits on days. So what will happen with this, I will predict that instead of everybody being discharged in 3 days, it might be discharged at 5 days now or 7 days, depending on what the max limit is. So I don't think this totally addresses the issue of getting the right care for children and adolescents.
Bill brings up a good question. What happens after the child leaves the facility? What kind of follow-up is there?
So we have another department that's comprised of therapy support staff that are called discharge planners, and they make update phone calls to the family every day. They work with them on who do you want to follow up with. If we down here in Terre Haute get a kid from South Bend or Gary, they're not going to come all the way back here for follow-up. So we work with them, and we also try and find places where these kids can have, they all get a follow-up therapy appointment, and they all get a follow-up appointment with a medical person that can manage their medications if needed.
This bill, Senate Bill 192, passed unanimously through the Senate. Do you get a sense, but not without a change or two, I think it was one change, do you get the sense that lawmakers understand and appreciate the problem?
I think so. Anything for children, I think they listen to more so than, say, if I was asking for extended days for adults. But I still think society as a whole doesn't understand the seriousness of mental health because it hasn't had the same spotlight as, you know, a medical illness. And people have a hard time conceptualizing that the brain can get just as sick as your heart or your pancreas or your kidneys, and they need treatment.
What this comes down to, of course, is money, like a lot of things. Let's take money off the table as a variable. In these sorts of situations where you have a child under the age of 18 who is suffering under a severe enough mental illness to be checked into a mental health facility, what should be in your view, the minimum amount of time? We're talking about 5 business days. That's what Senate Bill 192 would require. I don't mean for you to pick a number out of the sky, but is that enough? Would more be better?
It's going to be a case-by-case thing that we're going to have to evaluate. I think the 5 business days is better. Is it going to totally fix the problem? No. They're still going to have to follow up with outpatient, and we'll have to follow them through time. Just like, you know, if a kid got diabetes, you wouldn't have an inpatient stay and then not follow up with your endocrinologist to manage your insulin. So it would be an ongoing thing because the disease doesn't go away.
Have you heard any pushback against the extension to 5 business days? As we said, it passed unanimously in the Senate, but somebody perhaps represented by the insurance industry had to have opposed it.
I haven't heard anything as of yet, and frankly, I'm surprised because I would have thought we would have heard more about this.
I wonder if you have any explanation as to why we may not have heard anything. Do you think it's because the insurance industry has been over the years carving this away down to where it is, and perhaps has been expecting
some
legislation
pushback at some point?
Yeah.
I think so.
And so
it's the best explanation I can think of.
What's your response to any kind of a concern that an extension like this could lead to overspending?
I guess what I see at this point in time is when we get a kid that's only allowed 3 days, it's not uncommon for the kid to be back a week later or 2 weeks later. Sometimes these kids don't even make it out of the driveway and the parents and the families have to bring them back. So they go through that revolving door so quickly with that shortened length of stay. Are we still going to see some of that? Yes. But hopefully the time in between hospitalizations will be longer. And, you know, the state of Indiana requires them to have 2 inpatient stays before they can even be considered for a longer-term residential stay. And for some of these kids, that's ultimately where they end up.
So what I'm hearing then is that this could lead overall to a cost savings. Because if we're not giving them enough time now and they just end up coming back, giving them this extra time could mean fewer stays and fewer days total.
We're hoping.
Mm. Dr. Darla Hinshaw is a child and adolescent psychiatrist at Harsha Behavioral Center in Terre Haute. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Hinshaw.
Thank you, Matt.
And a quick note before our last segment, people in need can call a suicide hotline number at the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-TALK. That's 1-800-273-8255 to reach a trained counselor. The National Crisis Text Line can be accessed by texting CONNECT to 741-741. We're going to close out today's show with a conversation I had with State Senator Ron Grooms, one of the authors of Senate Bill 192, which unanimously passed the Senate and is now headed to the House. Senator, why did you want to work on this bill?
I chose to address this issue because of the testimony that I heard in talking with a friend of mine in the state Senate, a group of people who ran a hospital in Terre Haute, Indiana. And they pointed out to me the issues involved with having a short-term 3-day stay to try to treat psychiatric patients in child or children or adolescent hospitals, and how difficult it was to be able to formulate a treatment and develop any type of, I guess you would say, therapy progress or improvement or change in the 3-day window of the time that they would have that person in that hospital. Having a background in pharmacy, having at one time been in charge of a psychiatric hospital pharmacy is one of my businesses, as well as running my own pharmacy, had an interest in this subject, and of course as chairman of the Family and Children's Services Committee in the Senate, obviously have an interest in it from not only a committee assignment or committee responsibility, but also from the medical side, as well as the pharmacy side, as well as the issues involved with psychiatric patients, particularly children and young adults.
How did you decide on the exact change that it would make to turn the 3-day period into 5 business days? How'd you arrive at that number?
Listening to the management and the medical staff at the hospital that I visited, and having had experience with this in my own situation where I supervised pharmacy care in a psychiatric hospital a few years ago, I felt like that it was worthy of consideration and worthy of drafting a bill and pursuing the subject.
I guess I'm wondering if you feel like that number was a compromise in any way. Did it feel adequate, or did it feel like sort of the bare minimum we should strive for?
The 3 days, in my opinion, was an absolute bare minimum.
But transferring it to the 5 business days,
the 5 days was more of a compromise to see if we couldn't move forward with a few more days therapy, to see if we could stop this revolving door of these kids being in for 3 days, out for 7 days, back in for 3 days, out for 7 days, back in for 3 days.
I think obviously some people would say more would be better, but this was the best balance we could strike to make all parties happy, you think?
That's correct.
So why only
this
make...
This is the start of a longer stay in a psychiatric hospital for a child or an adolescent to have a better chance of succeeding in their therapy and success in their treatment.
I'm wondering why they'll only make this change for children. Why not just extend the period for adults who need mental health services as well?
the issue seems to be most prevalent, or the biggest concern is children at this time, because that seems to be the only issue that at that time I felt like that we could make progress, is the children involved rather than the entire population.
How do you respond to managed care organizations that say this would be tough on them financially?
Most of the care that is provided is a Medicaid population, and the bill focuses primarily on Medicaid and foster care children. And the majority of those expenses are paid for by the federal Medicaid program. About 65% of the funding would come from the federal government.
Do you see any obstacles at the State House that might get in the way of this passing? Who's against it?
The persons that would be against it would be the persons who run the state program for Medicaid, which is funded by the federal government. The extra work that they may have to encounter, the extra work in perhaps reviewing a 5-day claim versus a 3-day claim, the extra expenses to the state, the state's portion of the Medicaid amount to treat that patient, was not considered a significant amount for this bill to have to go to what we call a fiscal impact study.
So then what's your elevator argument, I guess, that you would make? I mean, you co-authored this bill, so you obviously believe in it and you support it. What do you tell those critics, those people who are sort of actively against it?
I would say to them that if they've ever been involved in treating a psychiatric patient or living with a psychiatric patient or managing child psychiatric care, that if they've ever been faced with that issue in their own home or their family, they would understand much better why a 3-day therapy or a 3-day length of stay is hardly enough time to get a child accustomed, accommodations in place, a laboratory analysis, clothing, food, an atmosphere where the child feels comfortable. 3 days is certainly not enough to admit a patient, begin treatment, and then expect results in a 3-day window. That's 72 hours. If this occurs on a Friday at 2:00 and that patient has to be sent home Tuesday morning, that's just not very much time to treat a patient who is suffering from psychiatric disorders, threatened suicide, mental instability, and other issues.
If this does pass, do you have any goals to expand it in the future? Do you consider this a first step, or is this?
This is a first step. Let's stop and see if this bill passes. Let's see if the 5-day stay or the 5-day length of stay on the first treatment makes a difference. Let's see if it actually helps the patient and provides better patient outcomes with the 3-day length of stay versus or a 5-day length of stay versus a 3.
Senator Ron Grooms, thank you so much for your time this afternoon.
Sure. Thank you.
He's an author of Senate Bill 192, which has passed the Senate and is headed to the House. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Maggie Galon. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Our show is engineered by Adam Gross. You can hear our podcasts wherever you get podcasts. Subscribe so you always know what we're talking about. Tomorrow, we'll catch up with State House reporter Brandon Smith on what's been happening in the Indiana General Assembly this week. And we'll hear about a new Indiana podcast just in time for Valentine's Day. Until then, we're on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. I'm Matt Pelser. Thanks for listening. This is All In.